Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of Health Talks with Dr. Trin. The one show, maybe the only show, that shows you a path towards a healthier life. And maybe a future without COVID. Could it really happen? Well, we're going to talk about that today, right, Dr. Trin?
Yeah, good to see you guys.
So here's what I'm amazed about this one. I'm always amazed at the people you find to bring on this show, but this one's amazing on a couple levels because you're always bringing in kids who've worked with you in high school and your tongue out programs and other sorts of things. And I'm always saying today, our general assumption is kids are lazy, they're millennials, they're into video games, just wasting time. Why don't they get with it and save the world? They're not politically active. Why aren't they marching? Why aren't they doing something? And yet you bring in these kids that are saving the planet and solving world issues. And here's another high school student today who's decided to tackle, on her spare time, I guess, COVID and COVID research. Welcome, Kate Chang, to the show here.
On her spare time, she published 5 papers.
Yeah, but she's in high school.
Are you a junior or a senior?
I'm a junior.
Oh, okay. One more year.
One more year. Yeah, right. When I was a junior in high school, all I wanted to do was party and have a good time and watch TV and eat Cheetos. I wasn't thinking of solving the world. But she comes by this. She has a good pedigree, as they say. She has a good mentor and inspiration because her father's been a guest in the show. Set it up, Dr. Trin. Who are we talking to today here?
All right. Well, Kate is amazing, obviously. A junior in high school. I was playing video games as a junior in high school.
We all
were. But her name is on 5 published medical journals, and she knows more science than 99.9% of those that I have met. She reads articles, and she's like, oh, she totally understands it.
I'm like, totally understands it. Well, but this didn't fall out of the sky. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Who's your father that's helping you with this stuff here?
Thank you very much for having me on the show and giving me the opportunity to speak. Also, thank you very much for the kind words. My father is a clinical professor of medicine at UCI.
There you go.
And he already has 2 FDA-approved drugs for anemia. Both my parents are physicians, so I always knew that medicine would be my path, but I didn't really know how I would go about my path towards becoming a physician until the COVID-19 pandemic hit.
Okay. And your father's been on the show before, I believe, right, Dr. Trin? We've had
him. Yeah. You know what you want to do already as a junior in high school.
That's amazing. That's applaudable because so many of us are still struggling when we go through high school and college and everything, wandering, trying to find the path. You seem to have a pretty clear path. Obviously, though, your parents are successful. And did they imbue you with this clear path, or did you just see them and say, I want to do that? Was this them pushing you in a direction, or you following in a direction?
It's quite surprising because my parents did not push me at all towards medicine. They just said they wanted me to be happy and pursue any path or career that was passionate to me. But I always thought that medicine was really enjoyable, and I thought it was just fascinating. Science has always been my passion. Since both my parents are physicians, I decided to look more into medicine and realized how much it resonated with me.
But let's talk to the reality here. You're a junior in high school. So what the heck are you doing? How do you even get your name on the thing? Is this in conjunction with your father, or are you doing this on your own, or a combination? I mean, how does a junior in high school get that kind of recognition? You have to spend years in these fields before they'll even consider publishing your papers.
So it's most interesting. My father, he's the one who initially discovered this potential treatment for COVID. He realized early in the pandemic that the immune response to COVID-19 would be the major factor in fighting off the virus. When COVID-19 first comes to the body produces something called interferons to fight off the virus. A particular interferon that makes the viral load or viral replication less is called interferon lambda.
Okay.
It is like the security guard of the body.
Dr. Trin always says it's the little troops guarding the castle here.
You know? Right, right. Instead of blocking the intruder when it's already upstairs, you want to block it at the entrance. This interferon lambda response is like blocking the virus from coming in at the entrance. But most fascinating is that the COVID-19 virus actually completely suppresses this interferon lambda response in the nose and the throat. Hmm. As a result, the virus is able to replicate in the nose and throat and come down into the lungs. So my father realized that we should boost this interferon lambda response, thereby preventing the virus from replicating. And this is especially relevant considering that new strains of virus are able to spread more rapidly and replicate a lot more, like Omicron. So if we can boost the interferon lambda response, no matter the variant, we would be able to contain the spread. So my father went on and he discovered Ramatriban. Ramatriban is a drug that has been used for the treatment of allergies for the last 20 years in Japan. And he realized that Ramatriban has the potential to boost the immune response against the virus. Later on, it also turns out that COVID-19 causes blood clotting. Blood clotting, especially in the lungs, can prevent proper transfusion of oxygen into the blood and delivery of oxygen to the rest of the body. Blood clotting can also cause organ damage, especially to vital organs such as the heart and the brain. So it is essential that we prevent blood clotting. Yep. Interestingly, this drug, Ramatriban, also prevents blood clotting. So it was a perfect situation, and this drug has great potential in COVID. So really, my journey began when my father asked me to create a figure for him to demonstrate this concept. On my own, I thought it was so fascinating.
I got to stop you for 1 second. So you create a figure. What does that mean? Is that a computer model? Is that a profile? Is that a
algorithm?
I don't know what you say create a figure is.
So a figure is like an image to demonstrate the concept. A lot of research papers, they have figures and images to show the pathway from going from one to the next.
So it's like a drawing. It's an actual kind of a drawing. Right. Okay.
It's like an infographic.
There you go. So he said to you, hey, I'm doing this research. Can you just help me flesh out this paper and create some drawings and some diagrams and some infographics to demonstrate this? You know, in a way,
because he figured I was the brand new generation, so I can use the computer.
Yeah, every kid just knows how to do this. You're a kid.
Automatic. Yeah.
Okay, so this is going to be in a research paper. He's going to put your drawings, your images, your figures into his paper if he likes them.
Yeah, and on my own time, I decided to jump into the science because when he first drew out the figure, I just did not understand anything. Mm-hmm. That was at the time where I really loved science, but I did not really understand medicine or these signaling pathways. I didn't even know what drug development was. I was completely ignorant to this entire field altogether.
Well, you're getting a little old. You're a junior now. So yeah, I would think you should know some of this.
Age 16 drug development, not a normal thing. So.
I guess we'll forgive you because you didn't know any of this stuff here.
Right. I was in 9th grade at the time.
Oh, okay. All right.
You're in 9th grade.
I'll give you a pass then. Yeah, you know.
And I decided to jump into the science to learn more about it. And more I read, the more fascinated I became. And then ever since then, I teamed up with my dad and started writing papers on this and working with him to do laboratory studies.
All right. So I got to stop you. You just say that so casually. So I'm 10. I'm 12, I'm 14. I decided to join in my dad and the research. What the heck can you bring at 12 or 14? A drawing I get. Hey, can you help me make a drawing? I don't know how to use a computer and do computer animation. You're a kid. You must know how to do this. Sure, Dad. But now the research, what can you bring as a junior in high school? Are you just crunching numbers? Are you figuring out a pathway to research? Walk me through this, because I'm sure I'm not the only one saying, what? I would be dismissive. I'm sorry to say, what can a high school kid bring to this? Maybe you could be...
I think you're writing some of the papers.
Yeah, I am.
My head's exploding, but go ahead. That's all right.
I believe learning comes from doing it yourself and messing up completely. I would prepare papers, but to be honest, they were really bad. They were terrible, right? But then my dad, he was very patient with me, and he walked through how to rearrange it and make it flow. So I practiced so many versions of papers. I can't even count. And I just kept learning and learning and learning and trying again. It never came on the first try. And at the beginning, I didn't offer anything, to be honest. I just offered a fresh mind who wanted to learn something new.
And a willingness to do this, help out your dad. All right. So now when you write it, though, walk me through, Dr. Trin, because I've never written a serious research paper. None of us have. I wrote papers in high school. I wrote papers in college. And you had to lay out your argument. I get that. It has to be clear. At one point has to lead to the next. You come to some conclusion here, and it's supported by the facts. You make an argument, and you support it with the facts. But do I rely on somebody else to lay out the argument, to come up with the argument? Hey, if you did this, this leads to this, and to make those connections. That's what your dad's doing. He's connecting the dots, and you're what, distilling it into a paper? Or are you actually contributing ideas, and he goes, hey, I hadn't thought of that?
It was a while back, and yeah, he connected the dots, and he would explain it to me, and then I would prepare the paper and like draw an outline, and it was very rough, and he would help me rearrange the dots to make it flow better. And now I'm the one writing the paper and writing the outline, making it flow nicely. I think my most proud moment is when I write a sentence or two and I show it to my dad and he doesn't edit it at all. Wow. I consider that a victory for
me. Yeah, right. Now, how was this accepted? These are in some sort of peer-reviewed journals or something here? This is not in just some local paper or something.
These are scientific medical journals, mainstream.
Now, wouldn't they reject it because of you and your age? Or all they care about is the argument and the science. They're not interested whether you're 16 or 60.
They care about the content, not the author.
Yeah. And so are you amazed? Are your parents amazed? Are your friends, are your teachers amazed? You're contributing to writing serious research at an age when you're not supposed to do any of this. You're in it rather early here.
I believe anyone can do anything at any age if you just put your mind to it and just really invest yourself in any topic. I know kids who are really smart in physics, like at my age, and they're already doing physics way beyond our age because they have a passion for it. So for me, writing papers isn't about, oh, I'm a kid and I'm a genius or something. I'm nothing like that. I'm just out there trying to learn more about medicine and just contributing as best I can to the medical knowledge.
One of the things that surprised me, a little off topic, but I think it's appropriate here. We did a show a couple of years ago on what it takes to get into college these days. And it was somebody, I guess they're professional guidance counselors and stuff, people that help you prepare to get into college. It isn't like my day. You just took an SAT, you took a test, and then you sent in a form and they said yes or no. Then they started writing essays and we never had to do any of that stuff. And then you had to show outside curricular activity, extracurricular activities, and maybe we showed a little of that. But it's become now, you got to sell them because there are a million kids with straight A's. There are a million kids with good SAT scores. So what sets you apart are the extracurricular activities and the extra thought and argument that you make. And one of the points that they made is these kids are doing amazing things. They're starting charities like Dr. Trin's tongue out type of stuff. They're doing their own research. They're starting their own companies at 16 and doing these things. It's almost like you have to be able to show that you cured cancer to get into Harvard these days. You can't just show up and say, I'm really smart and I worked really hard and I got good grades. What do you think of that? Any eye towards that? This clearly opened a lot of doors for you going forward to get into medical school.
To be honest, when I first went into research, I didn't really think about college.
Well, you're 12 or something. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, I do see at school how extracurriculars really help getting in. But I'm not really doing this for college. I'm just doing this as part of my passion and my career itself, because college is only 4 years of my life, which is a very short time. But I'm looking past that towards my entire career and what would set me towards my goals in terms of being a physician and going to medical school.
All right. I keep challenging you. You're only 16 or 17 or whatever you are here. You shouldn't be doing this stuff. And why are you doing this stuff? And you're just like, because I just love doing this. And why not? Given the chance, I'll jump in both feet. Same reason people are starting coming. Look at them. I live in a world of media. Oh, my goodness. You know, Justin Bieber. The famous Justin Bieber, wasn't he discovered because he was doing YouTube videos in a home here? And all of a sudden it launched a major career. I mean, what kids are being able to accomplish through the internet, power of the internet at an early age is mind-blowing.
And more than just the publications, I think the most gratifying thing was that Remetriband, which is the drug we've been working on, actually, we treated 4 out of 4 patients with severe COVID-19 in India, one of whom is my grandmother.
Yes, I remember him telling us that story.
Oh, yeah. Tell us that story
again. Tell us the story again. Yeah.
We were able to get Remetriband shipped from Japan to India. Mm-hmm. My grandmother is living in a central town in India named Indore. She is 90 years old. 4 or 5 years ago, she actually had a heart attack and she survived. She also has kidney disease. So she has many of the comorbidities that make someone that we consider to be more prone to more severe disease in COVID and unfortunately mortality. When she got COVID-19 in April of this year, we were very concerned. She was very weak. She had a very high fever and her oxygen saturation went down to 82 to 84%. She was admitted to the hospital for.
And is that because, again, I'm sorry, I have to just stop you periodically. As you mentioned before, I hear that all the time that oxygen levels drop, and that's when it gets dangerous. And that's when they go into hospital and emergency. And if they can't get the oxygen levels up, that's what kills you, right? Is that because of blood clotting? Why does the oxygen level drop and why does that kill you? And is that the principal fear of all these COVID things that you're going to get in your lungs and suddenly you can't breathe?
Yeah, because there's occlusion or the blood clotting prevents proper oxygen saturation of the blood. So that's why not enough oxygen is being delivered to the cells. And that's why there's severe disease.
And is that what kills the killer effect of COVID? Because I keep hearing people say, oh my goodness, it went into my lungs and suddenly I can't breathe. And suddenly I'm in on an intubator or whatever, an intubator. They're forcing me to try and breathe here and they can't. And it just fails and falls off and you die.
Right. That's true. Yeah. It is a major factor in the mortality of many patients.
All right. So continue the story. Your grandmother's got all these terrible problems that could lead her to die from this disease. Let's be blunt here. If you get COVID, you're in that category that probably is going to struggle to survive here because of these other conditions you have here.
So given her comorbidities, she wasn't given a very good prognosis in the hospital, and we were very, very concerned. She was given medications like remdesivir and steroids, but unfortunately, these medications were futile. And then hopelessly, she just discharged herself from the hospital to go home.
Probably to die, right? I'm not going to make it, then let's just go home and be at peace here.
Yeah, exactly, right? And she was very weak. She could barely move in bed. But actually, a family friend was able to rush over Ramatriban to give to her. After taking a few doses, her oxygen saturation went up to 90%.
Wow.
And after 4 weeks of taking the drug, she made a full recovery.
All right, so I got to stop you again. Your father told this story as well, and I had the same reaction. Why isn't this front page news? Why isn't this on CNN every single night? I know that's just one anecdotal case, and I know it takes studies and everything, but I think of all the other crazy drugs, and I don't want to go down a political rabbit hole, but there have been lots of them floated on the internet, most of which were nonsense. But everybody immediately rushed to find some other drug that was there that might have some benefit for this. And there were several high profile ones that were presented and mostly dismissed, not among everybody. But so if you found one that seems to be the real deal, why wouldn't drug companies be all over this? Why wouldn't the news be all over this? Why wouldn't the presidential task force be all over this? Why is this something I've not heard anything about?
The reason why a lot of drug companies are not interested in Ramatriban is because it's a very old drug. So it is not very profitable, since when a new drug is developed, companies, they have patents on it.
Right. Exclusivity for the next 20 years here. Right. But when the patent expires, anybody can make it.
Right. So this drug is already 20 years old. It's not profitable. It's only a couple cents a day. So it's very cost effective. That's one of the reasons why a lot of companies are not really interested, because it's not that profitable.
But I'm still a politician. I'm still a health official. I'm still work for the CDC or something. I'm sorry, Mr. or Mrs. Drug Company, but this is cheap. It's available. And I'm assuming it has very low, because it's been around so long, it has very low side effects. Does it? I don't know.
Right. Since it's been used for so long, the safety is already established. But I'm not too sure why the government hasn't jumped on it, to be fair. We actually applied to clinical trials administered by the government in multiple countries, but they would send us a message that Ramatriban did not rise to the top.
Why?
I have no idea, to be honest. I really don't know.
Maybe because the top is butt.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I'm not trying to make it sound like a conspiratorial show, but sometimes it's just that simple. My late father used to say, the answer is money. Now, what's the question? Whatever I'd say, he'd say, the answer is money. Now, what's the question? He used to say that about everything. We're good Irish Catholics. I'd say, why don't they ever let priests marry? The answer is money. Now, what's the question? Whatever it is, he thought money was the ultimate driver of all these things here from one extreme to the other. So here you are, you and your father, you think you've discovered something and you've tried it on a family member and it had, dare I say, miraculous results. And I suspect you've done other sorts of anecdotal studies or maybe even tried to do clinical studies. What's the next step to get people to wake up? Is it to get it into a place like Dr. Trin's where you do clinical studies, then you got to raise the money and do all this stuff? Or is it simply pounding away and collecting stories and saying, look, the overwhelming anecdotal evidence, this should rise to the top? What are you trying to do to break through that barrier?
We're trying to get funding currently to fund clinical trials for this drug. And actually, we were able to administer this drug to three other people besides my grandmother in India. And I do want to share one story in particular that actually really surprised me, because we actually had the opportunity to interview this man about his experience with Ramatrabin. So he's a 33-year-old man living in New Delhi, India. He got COVID as of April of this year as well. He was extremely sick. His fever was 106 degrees.
Oh.
Yeah. And his COVID pneumonia was in both lungs. His disease was so severe that his oxygen went down to 73%.
Everything you say says you die. That kind of fever with that kind of infection, with that kind of low oxygen level, you're not making it.
Right. His family tried to get him admitted to the hospital, but consider this, this was during the COVID surge in India.
Yeah.
There was no hospital beds available, and there was no oxygen cylinders available either.
And if there was, why waste it on this guy? He's going to die anyway. I'm sorry to say that, but at some point you have to start rationing care when you're under those severe circumstances.
His family also tried to get him remdesivir, which is the antiviral injection.
That's the one I was thinking about, remdesivir, yeah.
But that costed $1,500. That's his whole monthly salary.
Wow.
So it's not a covered thing in India where your insurance pays for it. You have to shell out money for treatment. Wow.
All right. So terrible story. And how did they hear about your drug? How, or is this a family friend or?
Family friend. We actually have friends in India that have the drug. So they know his family. So they were able to rush over the drug by Uber at midnight when he couldn't breathe. He was panicking. He couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
Family tried to calm him down, but they couldn't. So when they rushed over Ramatrabin after one dose, after 25 to 30 minutes, he was able to breathe again, and he slept soundly until the next morning. At 11 o'clock in the morning, they tested his oxygen saturation again, and this time it was 90%.
Wow. Now, this is anecdotal evidence. This is you telling us of these experiences, your friends and family. Is it just the money? Has nobody done any sort of trial on this? The drug companies aren't interested because it's an old drug that they can't patent. It's a cheap drug, so there's not much profit in it. So let's move on and find something else. What is the barrier? Is it just money at this point in time that's keeping this from being tried on a larger population of people?
To be honest, it's just money. Just money. Just we have all the CROs. We have everyone lined up. Every time we present to scientists, they are completely supportive of the concept and they really understand. I'm really grateful for all the support that we have from people, from scientists across the country and even around the world. The only setback that we have is funding.
So let's do some shout out, Dr. Trin. You got some people with some money or that know how to get money, like Steve's on the show here. Isn't Steve the inventor guy here that has come up with other things here?
Steve, can you shout out some dough?
Yeah, come on.
We can do some studies. He's on Facebook watching us.
Come on, Steve, or others. I'd love to hear from the Steves of the world. What is it you look for? There are people listening, or there are people here at UCI that do medical research, like your father.
By the way, Steve's responding to us. He says he's very interested. What is the product production time?
Okay. Yeah. Give us some of the details. There must be other barriers. I'm trying to find out what's wrong with this picture here.
It's funding. It's funding to do the clinical research. Every clinical trial is not free, right? It requires staffing. It requires hiring folks to recruit patients. It requires a team of scientists conducting the studies. So it's really a budget.
Give me an idea. I'm sorry to put you on the spot, Dr. Try. I know this is what you do at Irvine Clinical Trials, and this is part of your livelihood and everything here, but give me a ballpark. I don't know. What's it cost to do a clinical study? $100,000? $1 million? $1? I don't know. I have no idea what kind of money we're talking about here.
Depends on what country you're doing it in, too.
Does it really? Okay. Give me just some range. What kind of numbers we're talking about here to move this forward?
I think for a ramatriban study, with just the medication we're talking about here, we're not looking at the thousands. We're probably looking at the millions.
Millions.
But okay. Not like the high 100 million. It's probably, I don't know, is there a ballpark number that
you guys, Kate, if money is the issue, then you must have thought through how much do we need and what would it take to move this forward?
A couple million. My dad knows more about the money issue.
So it's that much money. It's a couple million dollars that somebody has to invest. And then what's the potential? If the drug works, you can't patent it because it's in the public domain. So what's the upside for the investors? I know it might work. Seems like it has some potential to work, but working means somebody's got to produce it. Somebody's got to make a profit from it here. Have you thought through that business model of it, or is that the next phase? She's the researcher. I'm trying to ask the business questions here. Okay. We found a limit to what she knows. He knows the research, but the money, I don't know.
No, but you're right. What's in it for an investor, right? Yeah, right. Is the question you want to ask.
The business
model. So for pharma to do this, the pharma is going to say, what is my return on investment, my ROI, because this product is generic, right? It's already out there. It's not in the U.S. You can't get it in the United States. It's in Japan as an allergy pill. So pharma is looking at this med and say, I can make a lot more money making a new product that I can patent than a generic medication that I can't make money on. So I'm not going to fund the research. So that's the problem. We have lots of potentially effective medications out there that can be repurposed to treat other conditions, whether it's COVID or something else. But because they're generic, nobody wants to do it because the patent has expired.
So let's get beyond big pharma and their evil, profit, greedy things. We all have, that story plays out a lot. And maybe there's some truth to it, or maybe it's overblown. But whatever it is, if ordinary investors wanted to get involved, say, okay, we're going to fight. Because the only thing that frustrates you is people say, well, big businesses, big something doesn't want to do this. But that's why there's nimble people that are disruptive that come in and say, well, if you wouldn't do it, I'll do it. Nobody wanted to do electric cars till Elon Musk came along. Here was too much to invest, and we've invested too much in the gas engine. Why are we going to change horses in the middle of the stream and all that stuff here? There are people that come along and say, I know this isn't easy, and I know this isn't where you want to go, but it's cheaper, it's better, it's more effective, it does all these things. And there are people that'll break through. But then there has to be a business model, how they're going to disrupt the system.
That's probably the challenge to get funding is, what is the business model for somebody to invest, right?
There must be a business
model. What do you think, Kate? Any thoughts on that?
Originally, we didn't really think of a business model as per se, because we were trying to depend on government funding so we don't have to pay them back.
Right.
But since the government did not give us funding on the first go, we do have used patents on this drug. So in the US, we can patent old drugs for a different purpose.
Right. A use patent. It's a, you're going to use it. It's never been used for this, and we can patent its use in this, right?
Right. But we even told the government that we will give them a license-free right to the patent. So basically, they don't have to pay us back any royalty-free use of the drug, because we really believe that this drug could benefit many people. But I'm not saying this is the treatment for COVID, because we have to verify through studies, through clinical trials. But I really believe that if the government is willing to take it, like, we're happy to do a royalty-free license.
Any other doctors coming on board, or you publish peer review things, or people other lining up and saying, hey, this sounds promising? Because I would think that, let's say the CDC, I don't know exactly how the Center for Disease Control works and what their role is in all of this, other than alerting people to the problems and maybe funding some sorts of research. I don't know if that's the entity that would fund research into this or give you money to pursue something. But that's the tip of the spear that we always hear, the Center for Disease Control. They're on the ground. They're trying to figure out where it is, alert public health officials, and find ways to control if this was Ebola ripping through the country, we'd be treating a lot differently. If 99% of people were bleeding to death out of every opening in their body, like Ebola, we would suddenly be paying a different attention to this. But because it has too many people think it's just a severe flu that can kill old people with other conditions, who cares? That may be my old guy viewpoint here. But if this was ripping through children, I think we'd have a different priority than if it was ripping through people my age and older here. Having said that, what would move the CDC's mind? Do they need more Dr. Trins? Do they need more researchers calling up and saying, hey, really look at this. They're onto something. This has promise. This has potential. Because they're not worried about the profitability of it. They're worried about the success rate. Or they only got, as I've read before, they've only got so much, as big as the federal government is, it's a machine. When they move it in one direction, they're not very nimble. They can't do 20 things at once here. And they do have a limited amount of attention more than money. Where can we focus our attention? And where are we going to get the biggest bang for our result here? And if we go down this path and ignore this, then are we putting ourselves 2 years down the road? We've wasted a couple of years here. So they're trying to guess what's the best one to bet on here. Right. The horse race is taking off and there's a bunch of horses and I got to put my money somewhere here.
I'm sitting here looking at clinical trials that are coming out on COVID treatment with smaller pharma organizations, not the big Eli Lilly or Novartis and Biogen. The smaller pharmas, even if they have great, great data, there's often a higher barrier to get attention. So that's really been the issue. It's like, hey, we have something here, but the FDA is talking to the big guys. They don't see the small guys. And so,
because if I'm going to bet on a horse, I'm going to bet on the horse that's the favorite, that's already won, got big money, big research. We got to do something big. Am I going to bet on Paul and his idea? Probably not, because how does Paul even break through the noise? How do you break through the noise?
Right, you're right. Because really all this started was in the garage, two of us doing research. And I am really grateful for the support that we have from many scientists around the world and professors who do support the concept. But as Dr. Trin mentioned, we are very small compared to a lot of these well-known pharma companies.
Yeah. Right. That isn't to dismiss that you don't know what you're doing. There's lots of people. Edison didn't know what he's doing when he was tinkering with a light bulb in the back of his garage or something here, endlessly running through filaments, trying to see which one wouldn't burn out. HP started in a garage. Amazon started in a garage. We accept the idea that small ideas can come from the most unlikely places here. But then how do you get people to rally behind it, start throwing money at it, and start throwing attention at it? That seems to be the challenge here. I get what you're saying, and I'm grateful that we can tell a handful of people or a bunch of people here. There are people in this community who are entrepreneurs, who are used to being disruptive. We're all looking for disruptors these days, and they are looking for ways to do something different. So I think I would focus less on the government and trying to get them to wake up and bang on the door when they're not listening. You're not big enough. You're not well-funded enough. There isn't enough study to open their eyes. There's just really fascinating, strong anecdotal evidence, personal evidence that you guys have tried.
And I do recognize that the government has done a lot of good things for COVID, like the development of vaccines and antiviral agents.
Yeah, that's where they're putting their money.
The only problem is that it takes a long time to develop. So we need drugs like Remastrobin that would boost the immune system against the virus and help people fight it off, buying time for the development of these vaccines and antiviral agents.
Dr. Trin seems to find these. He's a disruptor. What was the other guy you've had on a couple times here? Offend. I think you've actually joined the board of their organization here. And it's a treatment. It's not a prevention. It's not going to kill COVID, but it keeps it in the upper respiratory system, as she's talking about. It's a solution to try and keep the mucus strong and it'll flush it out before it finds its way down into your lungs here.
It's actually very interesting. This product called Fend, F-E-N-D, discovered by Dr. David Edwards of Harvard. He's become a friend of mine now. I was just out there 2 weeks ago, I think, Harvard meeting with their board. It also protects the airway, just kind of like Remastrobin protects the airway here with interferon. This is actually the product here. And it's got a little salt solution here. And what it does is that it hydrates your airway to protect and coat the cilia in the larynx throat area to push everything back up when viruses come on.
More mucus, your body will flush it out before it gets into your lungs and starts clotting.
So It's like a little drug, except it's not a drug.
The beauty of this is something you can carry around, a little battery powered thing. And it's more than just a saline solution. They've tried to figure out in very serious ways what will help coach your upper respiratory and create the most mucus, I guess, to keep this from...
It doesn't create mucus. What it does is that it hydrates your airway, and airway hydration and humidity protects the airway against pollution, against toxins that come in, and against viruses. They've done some good data studies on this in other countries, and some COVID studies on this product as well. And it's just really hydrating your airway with good results.
With a particular proprietary blend of saline solution and other things here that reach the most efficacy here. So there's a little treatment that isn't specifically designed for COVID, but could be designed for any sort of outside pollutant or anything entering. And kind of what you're talking about, your drug, it sounds like your drug is there to create antibodies to fight it before it goes any further. This is sort of using whatever you described there, your airway's natural moisture to flush stuff out or to keep it from going further into your body here. If I'm describing both of these correctly, I'm sort of trying to figure this. I'm not a 16-year-old genius here or on the board of 14 things. I'm just trying to wrap my head around. There are things out there that can keep this from going further into your body. That seems to be the key. If you can keep it contained, then it is a head cold. It is a flu. It doesn't kill you. But when it moves from here into your lower lungs, that's when death can occur or serious disease can occur.
And I think that's what's behind the idea of Ramatroban. It's not necessarily COVID specific, but it strengthens your body's defenses, your body's immune system to fight the viruses when they come. And not only does it that, but it blocks pro-clotting factors in the sense that, you know, COVID is a clotting problem because of the inflammation that comes from this infection. It increases the body's blood clots. And those blood clots, if they're in the lungs, it causes pulmonary embolus. If it's in the brain, it causes strokes. If it's in the coronary vessels, it causes heart attack. This is why there's so much correlation between having a COVID infection and heart attacks, strokes, and blood clots.
Right.
And Ramatroban has a pathway of blocking blood clots, which is a very interesting product that boosts the interferon defenses and also blocks blood clot. And so it addresses COVID in that way.
So here's my last question as we wrap up. First of all, wow. Again, anybody who thinks the new generation is a bunch of slackers and hackers and couch potatoes playing video games, watch this show and meet people like Kate. I'm very impressed. I think everybody is on here. One of the comments was, why do you even bother with college? Why don't you just send you straight to grad school here? You seem to be ready to launch into the world here. So congratulations on that. Now, the bigger question of treatments to prevent or keep COVID, not to kill it. That's what other drugs are trying to do. We're trying to find ways to kill it so that it goes away. But in the absence of it going away, if it's going to keep hanging around, because not enough people get vaccinated or it keeps breeding and morphing like the flu and finding hosts to keep changing. If this is something we're going to deal with for some time to come, we got three choices. One, we can all just roll the dice and get sick and hope we don't die, which is a scary alternative. But there have been people who have emphasized it. In the beginning, there was like the chicken pox. People would say, let's have a party and let's just all get it over with and we'll all get sick and then we'll be immune to this thing here. Well, maybe it doesn't give you forever immunity and maybe you don't make it through that experience.
Yeah.
That's one alternative. Let's all just get it over with and get it. The other alternative is let's live our lives in fear, shut down, isolated, mass, working from home, constant shutdowns, everything else. And the public's already weighed in on that one. We're not going there. We'd much rather just all take the risk. And more, I don't think there's an appetite for shutdowns, slowdowns, even wearing masks forever, all that stuff that I think. So then the third alternative is we've got to find a way to deal with it. And we've got to find a way to keep moving and keep going. Yes, maybe we'll wear a mask as much as we don't want to on airplanes and public spaces. I think that's going to happen whether we like it or not. Yes, we're going to force people to get inoculations if you want to come into a theater, you want to come into a restaurant, you want to get on an airplane, you want to work with a group of people. I know you don't want to and nobody wants to tell you what to do. Then fine, then don't come here. No shirt, no shoes, no service. I think it's not going to be government's going to force people to do this. It's going to be businesses to say, enough of this nonsense. I don't want to get people sick. I don't want to lose employees. And I don't want to have anybody have any hesitation in coming here. That's one way to deal with it. The other are what you're talking about. Treatments. things we can do. I'm going to fend. Everybody's going to carry a little thing to hydrate your airways. Everybody's going to take drugs like Retrofen. We're going to take things to boost our immune system, to add to our interferon, the defenders of the castle. We're going to flush it out. We're going to contain it. We're going to block it. We're going to stop transmission. We're going to come up with lots of strategies that we can go about our daily lives, not in fear of infection anymore. I would think that there's going to be a lot of impulse to find treatments going forward, not just ways to kill it, but ways to deal with it so that we can keep living. What do you think of that, Dr. Trin?
Absolutely. There's treatment, there's prevention, and there's strategies to boost your immune system and your immune system's defense.
To help your body fight this thing off and prevent it from getting into something serious. And this seems to fall into that category. So don't give up. I think you're in the next wave. I think we've all been looking for the magic bullet. And I think that's where the research and the effort's been, to inoculate, to kill, to wipe it out. We're going to have to learn to deal with this. And we're going to go into phase two, which is then I got to find ways to boost my vitamin C, to boost my defenses, to boost my interferon, to prevent my thing from clotting, to all this stuff.
And both Kate and Dad is leading the charge.
Yeah, right. I think you're in the next phase. I think you said we got something that maybe knock it out when you get it. And we were focused more on let's just kill it. We're trying to come up with inoculations. We're trying to come up with vaccines. We're trying to come up with ways so nobody gets this. And we've only gotten so far with that. Now it's clear this isn't going away. It's morphing too quickly. There's too many people that aren't inoculated or aren't going to get inoculated, and that's going to allow it to keep mutating and breeding. So how do we deal with it?
Kate, what else would you like to tell us that we haven't already discussed?
And how do people get in touch with you? Because we already got people like Steve saying, hey, I want to learn more about this. We sparked a little interest today here.
I think that we can really just take away from this pandemic and in future pandemics as well, that we should really be using and repurposing drugs for certain viral infections, especially to boost the immune response. Because since vaccines and antiviral agents take a very long time to develop, we need to prevent the deaths of millions of people that have died. So by doing this, we can boost the immune response. Because only now are we seeing an antiviral for COVID developed by Pfizer after millions of people have already died. So if we can just repurpose drugs, which is more cost effective to help boost the immune system, then we can prevent these deaths before the vaccines come out.
And I would only add to that, it sounds like just me sitting on the sideline here, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Trin, then somebody's got to come up with a business model that makes sense for that. Because the drug companies say, I hear what you're saying. There might be drugs out there we could use, but I'm in a business. This isn't a charity. I can't do this for free, even if it's effective. And the government, for whatever reason, is this the government's role? They need to step in and just buy up tons of these drugs and distribute them because nobody else will. And then we get to, well, then it's big government telling me what to do. And I don't like that idea either. If it's not big pharma or big government, who's the big deep pocket that's going to make sense of this and do something? What do you think, Dr. Trin? Money. We're down to money. We're dying because of fighting over money.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah. I can get mad about it, or I can say then somebody's got to figure out an answer to that. Is this a public welfare program that government buys and distributes without any hope of profit here because it's in the public good? Or is that not the right model and there's somebody else that can come up with a way to take this and repurpose it and come up with use patents and other ways to be more nimble and to still make money and to still profitably produce and distribute this thing so that we encourage capitalism? What it's supposed to do is go find an answer where nobody else can.
Right. Kate, how do we reach your organization, or how do we reach you or Dad?
Yeah.
Is there a website or an email when people are interested in this?
We actually created a company around this called Care Bio, Care Biosciences. So, but it's Care with a K. That's carebio.com.
And do you have a pitch deck? Do you have a way for people to invest in this? Have you gone that far? Or are you still looking for that kind of help to come up with business plans and an investment? I don't know. You need to have a whole legal structure for people to invest and to do things too. You got to have all that in place, not just a plan, but you have to have an approved private offering and all these kinds of things.
We have a pitch deck. So on the website, we have the email where people can contact us. And my dad has a pitch deck so he can present all the financial details of this and other information.
Carebio.com. Is that right?
Yeah.
So Carebio.com.
Well, it must be frustrating to feel like you found an answer and nobody's listening. We're appreciative that we'll do what we can through our local voice and our local community. And who knows where this could lead to. But I think you've got to start shifting your mindset. Somebody's got to just step up and say, is this the government's role then to take old drugs and to use them on the public good? And this is just something we pay for. That's why we collectively pay taxes and have a government? Or is this something the private industry and nimbler organization can step up when the big guys can't or won't or don't because it's too expensive and they're too committed to some other course of action that they think will make them more money? Because there's always an opportunity is what investors are looking for. Show me where nobody else is going and I'm interested. And you're going somewhere with some real interesting stories and facts of a drug that's already available. There must be other drugs. There's millions of drugs out there. There must be other ones that people haven't investigated and looked at. This could be a whole new strategy.
Oh, Kate, what do you think of the metaverse?
This is Dr. Trin's fascination. Don't live in the real universe. Live in the metaverse. And we're all going to go on and we'll put on little fake worlds. We're going to go live in Second Life or whatever. And we're all going to communicate with each other. And my little grandson's in Roblox. You know, you build these little private worlds and invite everybody to come.
The metaverse is coming, Kate. You got to lead the charge, Kate, on the metaverse.
So he's open. Their company's actually opening up physical locations in the metaverse so you can come and buy stuff using this little fake Bitcoin kind of currency that people if the real universe, if the real world ain't paying attention, then go into the metaverse. They're open to everything here.
I think it'd be cool if we could simulate conditions and give them treatments and actually get like a definitive result. Then we could actually even just simulate clinical trials and then see like, and then actually get results from those. And it's possible. I mean, that would be amazing.
See, Dr. Trin, you were laughing, but she's already come up with a real use for this. It's not just to sell it. It's to do virtual trials. We're going to virtually infect people.
Clinical trials with Kate Chang in the metaverse.
Yeah.
I like that. We're going to chat about that, Kate. Virtual clinical trials in the metaverse.
There you go. If that's really possible, why not?
You're going to be the lead for that.
She'll be on the cover of Time magazine. We don't need to do physical trials. We do virtual trials in the metaverse here. And we get good data back and everything here.
That's right. Let's build that. That's awesome. You're in charge.
All right. Well, fascinating discussion from a fascinating young woman who's just casually telling us, I'm working to solve COVID treatments. My dad and I'm writing papers and we're doing research. What do you do all day? I mean, do you just crunch numbers? Do you search the internet for other studies and examples? You're not doing any research right now on this other than just here and there trying it on people. But what do you do to research this thing? What does Kate do every day on this project?
Most days I'm at school, to be honest.
School? There's no time for that.
Oh, yeah.
Pull her out.
She's got to finish high school English. And,
waste. Get out of that. Yeah. Drop your history class. Wow. Let's go here. Yeah.
Yeah. Homework. Wow.
Do you ever look at yourself and say, why am I doing this silly homework on this? I could be solving the world's problems, but no, I've got to figure out. I got to write a paper on George Washington. Yeah.
I really believe I learned how to walk before I fly. So school is like learning how to walk.
Right. I don't know. You're flying pretty high already here, much higher than I was.
You're running, man.
Thank you for coming on. Keep coming back and keep reminding us as you reach milestones. We'll be a voice for this because I really do think that's the next thing. We're going to have to learn to live with this. And that means we're going to have treatments that boost our immune system, boost our interferon, boost our hydration. We're going to do everything possible so that we can go back to living with this thing because it ain't going away. That's clear.
Oh, yeah.
Well, neither are we. We're not going away. Dr. Trin, we're off next week for all those listening. Yeah. That's our 1 week down between Christmas and New Year's. So just have a wonderful holiday and see us back in January. Any upcoming hints? What are we going to see? And you come up with these people, Dr. Trin, Fend and these guys and stuff. How do you find them all? Are you just searching the internet for this stuff all the time here?
I don't know.
Word of mouth. Sometimes somebody says, hey, listen to this.
They're just conversations I have with people. And I'm like, that's a cool conversation. Why don't you come on the show?
Yeah, exactly. We'll see where it goes. Well, we got Steve's interest this morning. He's certainly somebody who's raised money and knows how to do things.
I'm going to connect you with some folks, Kate, you and Dad.
Thank you.
And we'll see if we can turn this conversation into some sort of reality. We don't want to just live in the metaverse and pretend. We want to get stuff really done here. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for a great year, Dr. Trin. We'll see you next year. We'll see you in a week in 2022 as we relaunch the next season of Health Talks with Dr. Trin.
Bye.
One more reason why you should tune in each and every week and tell your friends too as we take a look at Well, we have talks, conversations about topics on everybody's mind. Throw out some ideas, good or bad. We're talking about it. We hope you'll join us right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net. Streaming live from the University of California Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.